Hello and welcome to this webinar from the Business Marketing Club, or BMC. I'm Dave Stevens, I'm a B2B marketer and I'm chair and co-founder of the BMC. The Business Marketing Club is a not-for-profit community network of business marketing professionals and people interested in business marketing. It's run by business marketers for business marketers, and we provide face-to-face and virtual event meetups, podcasts, training, blogs, newsletters, mentoring, social media groups, community groups, and gatherings for business marketers. And today we've got over 1,000 participants across the world. If this is the first time you've joined us, you're really very welcome. Check us out and find out more at businessmarketingclub.org.uk. And if you've been with us before, well, welcome back. It's great to have you along again. This is the first of our webinars on how business marketers are dealing with change. We're living in a world of uncertainty with COVID-19, recession, political, social conflict dominating our lives. And that calls for us to do business marketing differently, both now and in the future. Over the course of this webinar series, we'll hear from client side and agency side marketers in businesses from startup all the way up to mature corporates about topics ranging from changes in working practices to changes in purpose and culture, changes in brand, marketing strategy, messages, channels. And we'll be sharing experiences and offering advice. We could have called the series Share and Offer, therefore, but we landed on the more catchy title of Show and Tell. We'll hear shortly how today's speakers are seeing the impact of change on demand generation, on marketing agencies, and on customer insight. As you listen, type a question or comment into the questions box, and I'll put your questions and comments to the relevant speaker after we've heard from them. If you represent a business that has a B2B marketing project or role that you'd like to ask for help with in filling from this community on this call, drop some details in the questions box and I'll mention it at the end of this webinar. Please also flag in the questions box if you'd like to be a speaker at a future BMC webinar, write about this one, or find out more about the BMC, and I'll be in touch. You can tweet along to today's webinar using the hashtag BMCShowTell. That's BMCShowTell. So let's get started then. Our first speaker today is Chris Kemp, the owner of marketing agency Ingenuity. Chris will offer his take on how business marketing is changing through the speed and agility of marketing agencies. Chris, welcome to the webinar and over to you.
Thanks, Dave. Thanks for having us, and thanks to my fellow panelists as well. But change. Well, I suppose the last 4 or 5 months we've seen more change than definitely any other point in the 15 years that Ingenuity have been going. I set up Ingenuity just over 15 years ago. We were 15 actually on Saturday, so it's quite interesting reflecting then on kind of how things have changed over the last 4 months and indeed over that time. But I suppose I'm keen to start by, you know, talking about speed and agility and how agencies have really adapted and how clients have adapted in this period. But I suppose just by starting, we're really fortunate as a business because we sit between agencies and brands. So for agencies, we help them with their sales, their content, their performance in pitches, and how they generate new leads and opportunities. And for brands, we help them in a number of different ways, including running lots and lots of pitches, which fortunately for the agencies, they'd be delighted to know that a lot of those are now coming back in the last 4 or 5 weeks. So that there seems to be good news on the horizon from that after what's obviously been quite a challenging time for many agencies. So I suppose if you go back to 3 or 4 months ago, when you look at what happened, it all happened obviously very, very quickly from an agency point of view and from a brand point of view. And I think what you saw with brands very quickly is they kind of fell into three camps, really. There were lots of brands that stopped spend overnight, and it was quite radical. And it was obviously, you know, quite radical for some brands you wouldn't necessarily expect it to be. You know, people like Coke that stopped spending quite quickly, and people were surprised on that versus travel companies and ones that you would expect. There were obviously some brands that were kind of continuing to try and be as much as business as usual as they could be. And then there were lots of clients that were actually beginning to spend more and really get out there and look at their channels and kind of tearing up their current plans and really kind of going for it, what they were doing, particularly obviously within digital channels and trying new channels and stopping experiential and all the obvious things that we'd expect. And I think for agencies, we saw kind of the same really. They fell into three camps really. They fell into this place of, we need to, you know, we're in a big trouble here because we're in the world of experiential. So we need to try not to use the P word too many times, but we need to pivot. Or we're actually in a place where we can take advantage of this from a digital point of view. And we can really, you know, get out there and we can push dynamic content out to our customers or for our clients' customers. And we can really push things forward. So I think agencies kind of, you know, they saw what was in front of them. And I think for a lot of them, they probably didn't really, and I think we look back on the period, appreciate how much has changed and at great pace. And I think really what I would say is that I've been really impressed by what agencies have done in this period in terms of, you know, taking the view from the agency side to start with, how impressive they've been in terms of the speed at which they've adapted and they have got content into the marketplace. And it's not just content, obviously, it's also kind of underlining strategic piece as well. But it was, I remember talking to a couple of CMOs a couple of months ago, and they were talking about, you know, how long it used to take to make a TV ad. It was kind of, you know, similar to making a baby in terms of 8 months being, not 9 months, sorry, being the period of time. And they were saying actually what we're now producing in kind of 3 or 4 weeks is incredible. And these were big global brands. Obviously, they were slightly tearing up their big brand platform idea and changing their focus. But, you know, they were just so impressed about what could be done in that period of time. And I think that speaks volumes of the agencies, given a lot of the restrictions around production and filming and a lot of the obvious stuff, really. So I think we saw, a lot of people have spoken about for a long time, that, you know, there is this changing world of speed of content. And I think we really saw that come to light. And for lots of businesses, it had to, you know, in terms of big retailers, you saw people like Tesco were doing overnight in terms of how they were filming, getting your content out. Obviously, a lot of the government campaigns were being turned around at pace. And we saw really kind of, you know, brilliant ideas being brought to the fore and kind of driving forward. So I think there's been huge strides in that whole piece, not just around digital transformation, but also around how we get dynamic and personalized content out to people and how we really try and build strong messages with people. We've also seen that in what we do as a living in terms of how we've seen the pace of some agencies, how they've developed their own offering to help clients. So from a new business point of view, a lot of agencies have been really proactive in terms of sharing content. And I think we saw that a lot at the start, didn't we, from agencies and brands, sharing content online through LinkedIn, lots of webinars, lots of really, you know, being really open to the marketing community. And I think that was super exciting to see. And it was great actually doing what we do to see agencies really say, right, come on, we're going to get out there and we're going to push this through. And I suppose it goes back to that whole piece around speed and agility. I think one thing that we need to be really mindful though is that sustainable to keep moving at this pace? Because I think what we can't do is not just, you know, for a long time, people say content for content's sake. We can't get to this place where we start to lose the bigger strategic and creative for, and it becomes, you know, this massive content out in the market. And I think we need to be really, really clear that, you know, speed and agility is really important, but there has to be that under kind of underlining brand for. And we did also see a lot of content and advertising that looked quite similar. And I think that's, again, a thing that coming out of this, people would be need to be, you know, reassessing. And, you know, it's also been a period of time, again, when we talk about speed and agility, that if you look at what Martin Sorrell's done and a lot of the bigger groups are doing, people like S4 and Media Monks and Mighty Hive and even the likes of Craft in the Can and the Tags and these production groups, how in the last 18 months to last year, how they've really got to an offering where they can produce that content at scale. But I think what we're seeing is a lot of people can do that, and I think that's really exciting for the industry in general. It's not just about the big groups or the new groups. It's, you know, I think agencies in general, right across the board, and the independents have got a really good opportunity to, you know, change their thinking and get out there and be really proactive in what they're doing. And I think on that note, just to finish on the kind of, I suppose, the whole piece around, you know, speed and getting stuff done and, you know, getting stuff out there, I think what we did find quite early on, and I think this is a really important point, that the role of the specialist, I think, will be more important than ever. And if you look at the role of things such as UX and, you know, experience, really, I suppose, and kind of user experience and the importance of that and the changing nature of digital versus physical, that we can't lose those crafts and those specialists such as PR, such as UX, such as, you know, customer engagement. And it's really, really important that we understand that some of these areas do take time and that you need super talented people to come up with those ideas and drive them through. So, you know, while we see huge growth from a transformation point of view and we see, you know, real progress in terms of ability to create content at scale, I also think it's important that we're mindful of those specialists and we're also mindful of people as well, because I think we need to invest in people to allow those real thinkers to continue to develop their thinking and what they're doing for their clients. So, yeah, I suppose as a starter, that's kind of the overview of what I've seen in the last 3 or 4 months relating into kind of pace of change and particularly in change around speed and agility.
That's brilliant. Chris, thank you so much for your time there. But if I can cheekily...
You're welcome.
If you've got any questions for Chris, start your question with Chris and we'll try and get those questions to him after we've heard from all of our speakers. Just enter those questions into the questions box as we go. What we've got coming up, we've got something on demand generation, we've got something on customer insight, but first we've got a poll. And this is something that's available to all of those who are attending the event live via a computer. And the question that we're wanting to put to you is, how high a priority is selling to new customers for you and your clients right now? And you can vote all the way from low priority through to active, through to, hey, you know what, we've never really eased off on this one. We'll give you a moment or two to cast your vote, and then we'll take a look at the results. If once you've voted, you want to pop a question in the questions box for Chris, please do so right now. And also do join us on social media where you can use the hashtag BMC Showtell. That's BMC Showtell. We'll give people a moment or two longer. Okay, and let's pull the poll there and see what the result is. So there you have it. 53% of you are saying that it's an active priority. We're focusing significant budget and resources on selling into new customers right now. For 26% of you, you're warming up. And for 21%, very impressively, you've never eased off. Interestingly, though, nobody said it was just a low priority right now. And that's a question that has been planted by our second speaker for the session. Angela Richmond is the founder of Red Fox Research, which specializes in market research for B2B and tech teams. And Angela is going to talk about how change is coming to the use of buyer insights in order to connect with new customers. Angela, welcome to the webinar and over to you.
Thanks, Dave. I planted that question because I think listening to some of the early webinars that you ran, that the BMC ran at the beginning of the crisis, you know, there was a really, really clear message, which is don't sell. We're not selling now. We're trying to help people. We're trying to support our customers. And my sense was that was definitely the case then, but I have really felt that it's changing recently. And I was just really interested to know whether that was happening as well. And I think, you know, the fact that, you know, nearly three quarters of people say you're very actively selling now, that fits right in with what I've been seeing. Market research is a very interesting industry because it's a very good barometer for the state of the economy generally. I've unfortunately worked through several recessions now, and although COVID is a very, very unique situation. There's no doubt about that at all. The recession that it's inevitably putting us into isn't. You know, we've been through the credit crunch. We've been through, you know, if you're a bit older, you've also been through things like Black Wednesday. I'm sad to say I can remember the miners' strike, but, you know, recessions aren't new. They come along every 10 years or so. And I think the thing is, how do you deal with them? You know, you can't just completely stop. And Chris talked a little bit about, you know, people freezing and just putting on the brakes, and that's not really an option. So, you know, I think that for market research, what happens is that one of the first things that always gets cut is marketing. And market research is at the bottom of the marketing food chain, I have to tell you. It always gets cut before everything else. So when the whole thing first kicked off, I admit I just closed the laptop and did nothing for about 5 weeks because I knew that there was no point. But sure as eggs is eggs, you know, and I've seen it before, things start to warm up. You know, I kind of sensed that that would happen. But what happened around May was that we started to win more projects again. And I think it was just interesting to sort of see the type of projects that we were winning and the kinds of things that people were doing, because they certainly didn't fit in with that narrative of focus on your current clients. All of the work that we've been doing recently has been aimed at helping clients grow, helping them win new business, even startups. So I think looking at those examples, you know, hopefully will help people who are thinking about their own marketing and market research strategy. But I also think it's quite an interesting commentary on where we are in this journey through the recession. I think one of the things that stimulated a need for research, if I look across all of the things that we're doing, is a recognition that markets have changed, customer needs have changed. And if you're going to build your strategy on the data that you had in-house or what you can find in the public domain, it's probably going to be wrong. That's a really dangerous journey to go on, because everything people are doing now is completely different. What's driving their decisions is very different. So there is, I think, a thirst for new information and new data. So the first example that I'm going to give you, and this is something that we, you know, we do hear a lot about account-based marketing, ABM, in the Business Marketing Club. And the first example actually is from a client that was really focused on ABM, only sells to very large organisations and actually mostly in the public sector. It's a client that's got a procurement platform, which is used by public sector clients. So that's very relevant at the moment. Actually, their business never really slowed down because, of course, there has been a lot of public sector spending. And a lot of it, you know, has not always been well procured. You know, there's been a lot of very quick spending where there hasn't always been the right kind of competitions for the contracts. So they're in an area where they can provide public sector with a procurement platform where they can run a fair competition and do the due diligence. But the organisations they're selling to are very complex and they are changing very quickly. So for them to be able to go and sell to those and do their ABM, what they were looking for was really almost an account plan from us. So they needed to understand what's going on in that particular account, what's going on in that, you know, for example, if it's a combined authority, a large local, well, a sort of conglomerate of local authorities run by a mayor, what's the politics that's going on within that business? Who's making the decisions about spending? Is it procurement led or is it led by the political people or other people? And the thing with public sector is you have to get, as to some extent you do with corporates, you have to get behind the sort of big talk about aspirations and goals and find out what spending actually is going on in public sector. Because one of the interesting things about public sector is they often have money that they don't spend because they don't have a good process for spending that. So one of the things we wanted to understand was, where are the pockets of money that are actually being released and how is that being released? So the reports that we've been putting together for them really identify where the opportunities lie in each of those public sector organisations, who they should be targeting, who are the influencers, and those are not things that are, you know, always dictated by job title. They can be, you know, there can just be people who are very influential within local government organisations. And what are the things that they need to start the conversation? So some of that, when you're thinking about starting the conversation, will be what are the hot topics within that target account? But some of it can be, you know, what the person that you're selling to, you know, what's their favourite football team? You know, what are their interests? What are the things that are going to, you know, press the right buttons with them? So those were the sorts of reports that we put together. The information's kind of, it is all there in the public domain. The skill really is in knitting it together to make it something usable that an account manager can go and target. And, you know, I've done these in the past, but actually, you know, let's just say one of the largest search engines in the world, you know, who you would think could access that kind of information very easily, but the skill is knitting it together and getting the insight out of it. So, you know, for that client, they were very much thinking, how can we make the most of the opportunity that has presented itself to us? A very different client that we've been working with is a tech startup, and there will be, you know, a lot of tech startups who are involved in BMC. And they were in the process of developing a go-to-market strategy. Now, you know, I guess for a business who's a startup, you can't just say we're not doing anything now. You know, you've got all this investment, you've got to, really keep going. So they were in quite an interesting situation, because the solution that they had was actually a bolt-on to Microsoft Teams. And you'll kind of be aware that that's something that has just grown exponentially, use of Microsoft Teams. But in order to build their strategy, build their numbers, they needed really hard data on who's actually using Teams, what kind of sectors, what kind of size of business, and is it sustainable? You know, is it something that people are going to stop using once all this is over? Or has it brought forward a load of, you know, potential growth that was there anyway, and now people will embrace it? So that was really important for them. And of course, is there a demand for their solution? So we did a very, very large scale quantitative survey that just looked at a whole range of different size of businesses and different sectors. First of all, to size that addressable market, but also once we had somebody that was a potential target, then we would ask a more detailed set of questions so that they could understand the needs and pain points. And that's been really useful for them, because it's helped them to develop their messaging, it's helped them to develop their comms strategy. So it's kind of done everything that, and actually Chris talked about sort of speeding things up a lot. It's done what maybe 5 years ago we would have done in two separate projects, would have taken months to do. Part of it was driven by a fact that, you know, they didn't have a lot of budget. Part of it was driven by the fact that we had time, so we were happy to spend time working on it. But actually, they got incredibly good value for money out of the study, because we had to think about how doing it in a very agile way. But, you know, just to that point about we had time, I mean, I'd always rather be working than not working. So they had an opportunity to get great value for money out of us. And I don't know whether other people are finding that they've been over servicing clients recently, but, you know, why not is my view. I've certainly had some very good deals from companies that I deal with, that I think now is a good time to get value for money. And then just very briefly, how are we doing for time? Just very briefly, a third example was a payments provider working in the charity sector. And they were going through a rebrand and they needed content to go out and create stories. Now, the charity sector is quite an interesting one, because it's kind of had upsides and downsides. On the upside, people have been actually very minded to give. You know, they've been in quite an altruistic frame of mind. But on the downside, charities haven't had things like, you know, marathons, sponsored coffee mornings, all those activities that would normally generate a lot of funding for them. So actually we took advantage of that and we did a survey that talks to UK citizens about how they felt about giving to charity, whether they'd be interested in getting involved in virtual events, you know, and just some of the more hot topics going on around that. So that's given them some talking points to go out to the charities to you know, to get a conversation going. So that's an example really where COVID's created an opportunity. So, you know, I suppose in summary, you know, what my take from what we've been doing lately is that there's opportunities to be had even in a crisis situation and a recession. And if you hold back on new business and marketing, then you're going to lose out on that potentially. So, you know, I have seen a few recessions and I do actually really believe that. I think market research has never been more important. Okay, that's a bit of a plug from me, but clearly the data that we have at the moment is very out of date. It became out of date overnight. And I think that having the right marketing understanding is important. But I also think there's great value to be had. And if anybody is thinking of doing any market research, I can promise you that any market research agency, not just me, will give you a good deal right now. You know, now's a really good time to be doing those sort of insight things. And I'm sure lots of other things as well. You know, if you have the budget to do something, I honestly would take advantage of it. So there you go, Dave.
Great shout. Thanks, Angela. If people have got any questions for Angela, please start your question with Angela. Put it in the questions box and we'll get those questions addressed shortly. Equally, if you've got any questions for Chris all around the need for speed and agility at this time, then please do put those in the questions box too. And we'll try and get those questions over to Chris just a bit later on. You can join in the social media conversation at BMC Showtel. That's BMC Showtel. Our third speaker today was to have been digital specialist Beth Lloyd Wright, but I'm afraid Beth has had to pull out due to family circumstances. And I'd like to just pass on the best wishes of the BMC. I really hope Beth can join us for a later webinar. To our final speaker, Louis Fernandez is Managing Director Northern Europe at HRS Group. Louis is a revenue growth-driven business leader who's led marketing departments, demand generation and sales teams at technology leaders, including SAP, SAS and HPE. And Louis is going to talk about how change is affecting the monetization of demand generation. Louis, welcome to the webinar. And over to you.
Thanks very much, Dave. It's a delight to be here. So I'm really pleased that you're having me along to talk. I think probably the place to start is I just want to pick a couple of points that both Chris and Angela made. I mean, Chris was talking about the speed of content and Angela was talking about government procurement. And it struck me that there's quite a juxtaposition there between those two things. You know, speed is great. And I think it's great that we're all agile. But then when you play it back with government procurement, can be very long and drawn out. I speak from many, many years of experience of being on the receiving end of it. And it strikes me that currently in the current climate, government rhetoric is very, very interesting, but government execution can sometimes be a little bit lagging. And this also then plays, I think, very much to what we see from a demand generation point of view. There's always a lot of talk about great demand generation, how you use ABM, lots of different techniques to really stimulate demand. But what happens once that demand is stimulated? How do you monetize it? And I think there's a bit of a disconnect between, for want of a better analogy, the front end of the pantomime horse and the back end of the pantomime horse. And I've spent the majority of my career trying to get marketing and sales departments to talk to each other and actually do great things. So what I want to talk about over the next few minutes is less about how we need to change, because I feel that there's always change going on and there's a little bit of emperor's new clothes about a lot of that change that we see. But it's almost going to be a talk about things that you need to do, I believe, to go back to basics, and then more around programmatic, pragmatic approaches to monetizing the demand generation. Before I get into that, though, I'd like to just run a little poll, if I may, just to see how you, the audience, find that you get on between your marketing and your sales teams and how closely aligned that is. So if we could just put the poll up very quickly. So, you know, I just wanted to just tweak this out, because my own belief is that when we look at these kind of things, there's a definite correlation between performance and alignment. So I'll just give you all a couple of seconds just to have a look at this. Don't know how we're doing on results, but Elise, can we share the results? That would be great.
Louis, just for the purposes of those people who are listening on audio on playback, could you just take us through the question and those
sure.
results?
So the question that was posed to the audience was, how well do you feel your alignment is between sales and marketing in your company? And the options were, it's broken, we're working on it, could be better, it's okay, or we're joined at the hip. And the distribution of results were about a fifth of people saying we're working on it, about a third of folks saying it could be better, again, a quarter of folks saying it's okay, and again, a fifth we're joined at the hip. So kind of interesting how that correlates. Thank you. My own belief, like I say, is that it's great if we can be really creative at the front end of the process and we do great demand generation campaigns, but it's what happens at the back end, and it's pointless being creative. It's pointless having fantastic insight. It's pointless doing any of these things if it's not executed on the back end. No demand generation is ever going to work until you close the sale. And oftentimes I feel that with demand generation, and this is the pragmatic, practical piece, is that it sort of misses the key metrics that matter. Frankly, as a revenue leader, I couldn't care less about open rates and campaigns. I couldn't care less about page impressions. It doesn't interest me at all. I care about revenue. And there's that correlation between if we're spending money over here and what we spend the money on in terms of campaigns doesn't translate through to performance, then we have a problem. And I wonder how many people are tracking things like revenue. Okay, yes, we've started doing that, and return on investments, we do that. Do we track things like average order values? Do we track individual close rates of sales reps? Do we understand that in marketing, and do we care? Because often, again, I feel that there's that barrier that's like, hang on, I've done my bit as a marketer, now it's over to sales and they can just deal with it. And that doesn't work. What I'm also quite interested in is the whole piece around the MarTech stack and the sales tech stack. We always talk about MarTech, but we often forget that there's a sales tech stack to it. And we occasionally think about things like CRM, and you know, everybody knows about Salesforce, and that's great and fantastic. But what about all the other bits that bolt onto that? How do we take those insights that Angela was talking about and use them not just in the actual marketing campaigns, but actually in the sales part of the engagement? How do we use that to stimulate demand? How do we use that even with things like our messaging frameworks? And I've always worked at four very basic principles here. You know, if I'm going to be talking to somebody who's going to make a purchase decision and they're going to be parting with millions, I hope, there are four things they need to be pretty confident of. Number one, why should they care about anything I have to say? What's in it for them? Number two, why on earth should they believe me? Where's my credibility? I need to be able to demonstrate that I'm not putting them personally at risk, and that I'm able to deliver outcomes that are relevant to them and their metrics. Number three, what do you want me to do about it? It's great you can talk to me about all these great, fantastic things that you may or may not be able to do, but what are the next steps in that process? And number four, what's the compelling event? Why now? why should I do anything right now? Because oftentimes the biggest competitor that we have in a sales process is do nothing. It's not others. It's actually the status quo is just the easiest course of action. One of the other things that I find that there's often that disconnect between the marketing and sales teams is there might be, as I said, some great marketing that goes on, but then how does that handover work? We get some leads. How are the leads qualified? Do we have criteria that we've all agreed on? Do we understand that across the entire marketing sales continuum? Do we understand who needs to do what and when? And then once we actually get into the pursuit of an opportunity that we want to close, where is the sales support? Because ABM, I believe, extends not just from the initial demand, it's through the sales support process to get to the closed deal. We did this great campaign and it was fantastic and oh, it's won all sorts of accolades, yet you've got nothing to show at the end of it. I'm actually going to use a B2C example here. And this is one that I remember from years ago. You may be aware of the sort of Cannes Lions and what happens there and everything. It was a great campaign, TV campaign that happened. Won all the accolades for creativity. It was absolutely fantastic. You know, and it was, for those of you old enough to remember Danny Kaye, it was Danny Kaye doing Singing in the Rain. But what they'd done is they'd CGI'd it and he was sort of body popping all over the screen and everything. And everybody thought it was really, really great in terms of the creativity. When it came to product recall, not one person could tell you what it was for. And actually, the agency responsible for it was DDB, great B2C agency, for their oldest client, Volkswagen. And the actual product was the Golf. Golf Reinvented was the campaign. Now, that, to me, epitomizes where this all falls down. Great creative, not related to what we need to actually end up with, and nobody remembers it in terms of what it was for, what it was designed to do, stimulate sales. So I think that's a really important piece to sort of bear in mind. And then the last things that I just talk about, and it sort of brings us full circle to what we started off talking about, which is sort of, you know, it's about revenue, duh. You know, it's focus and governance. Let's make sure that actually everything we do and everything we measure is geared towards the outcome that we want to achieve. As Dave said, you know, I run the operations for HRS Group in Northern Europe, HRS standing for Hotel Reservation Service. So you can imagine the kind of times we've been through over the last several months where nobody is booking into hotels and our revenue streams have been quite severely impacted. What we've had to do is absolutely have a laser focus on what is important and what isn't. And what's been interesting is the business we have been winning in this market because we have had this laser focus. And it's phenomenal, really, really great. And I'm delighted with how the teams have been doing in terms of growing that business, which when it comes back, we will be able to monetize. So that's really all I had to say. I hope that sort of helps a little bit and gives you an idea of what I mean when I'm talking about the actual monetization of demand generation.
Louis, that's brilliant. Thank you so much for that. If people have got any questions for Louis, please do put them in the questions box and we'll address them, well, almost instantly. So if people have any questions for Chris or for Angela or for Louis, please do send them through now and we'll try and get some of them addressed. Let's go to Chris first of all. So Chris, you talked in your piece about the importance of speed and agility, but also the importance of doing it in a sustainable way. And I wondered whether through the interactions you'd had with your clients or and other parties at this time, whether you come across some really good techniques for sustainably being speedy and agile in marketing.
Yeah, I mean, I think it comes down to probably systems and plans in place of how you work with your clients. I think
I think the planning stage of getting together a clear plan and methodology and way of working is kind of become more important than ever. And I suppose the multi-dimensions of campaigns. I mean, what I'm really talking about is how agencies are getting campaigns out to market so quickly for their clients. So I suppose if you're talking about that on an ongoing level, what you've got to do is the importance of the overriding brand platform, and then the importance of kind of shifting spends and shifting budgets around where people are spending their time. So I think there's so much of it that is actually around following the consumer and seeing what the consumer is looking for and how those trends are changing. So I think the good agencies now are producing content that really can work really hard in so many different channels. And I think that's the thing you're seeing more and more of, is where budgets are going, how they're not being so reliant. And you see that a lot, I guess, with in this period, probably the shift in terms of media as well, but above the line media, more traditional media, how that's been changing to digital, partly because you can move it quicker and change and cancel things, but just also because of the way the market's responding, really. So I think a lot of it is about how making sure that this is very much from a creative point of view, that the agencies are producing assets that can live in more and more channels, and how they're utilizing those assets to make them work harder. But then how they're also working to understand in kind of real time what the research back is at, and then changing that accordingly. So I think that's what we're going to see more of. And that's where I think dynamic content comes in, personalized content comes in. So I think it's so much that a big thing of kind of where the change is. And a lot of that now also come into technology, in terms of how people are using that technology to measure things and then producing that content accordingly, really. So I think rather than processes, I think it's more about a way of thinking about of how people are producing campaigns, how they're analysing them, and how they're reacting to them. Does that answer the question, Dave?
I think so. Thank you very much. Thank you. Which kind of leads us neatly on to Angela. So, Angela, I have to say, I was surprised by the examples that you gave. And the thing that really surprised me about those examples is, as a dyed-in-the-wool CMO, I kind of expected some really big, long-term, processy, expensive project examples that you'd be giving us. And what you gave us was, well, actually, very much to kind of Chris's line, things that are very agile, speedy, nimble, very, very quick to do. I wondered whether you thought actually that my characterization there might be symptomatic of a perception problem that market research has, that it's expensive, time consuming. Yes, you've got to do it, and it's all very worthy, isn't it? But actually, there are no kind of quick fixes. You need to put your sound on, Angela.
I think that what recession often does is it doesn't suddenly create a new trend. It just speeds a trend up. And I think that we've been seeing for quite a long time that those really big programs are, that they are still around for some big organizations, but they're not the norm anymore. And I think that the mainstream market research world has probably been taking some examples from UX research and thinking more about agility and Scrum and this sort of thing. You know, so more and more we'd be thinking about doing a piece of research and reporting back at intervals, deciding, do we need to do any more research? Do we need to change this? And the, you know, one of the examples that I gave you of the work we did change it quite a bit as we went through. You know, we started with the sample structure, which is normally completely sacred, and halfway through went, this group of people just aren't worth talking to. You know, let's shift it to somewhere else where we can see that we do want to have better coverage. And I think that, you know, technology helps that to some extent. If you're doing work online rather than teeing up loads and loads of depth interviews, then you've got that ability to change. But you're absolutely right. And that kind of occurred to me when I was thinking of the examples, that it's quite unusual that I could say, well, here are three projects that started less than 2 months ago and are finished. You know, there'll always be things in the pipeline, things that, you know, are just going on forever and ever. And really, they were very quick. Mm. But I don't think that will change. I think that that is the way we'll go now.
So the more agile approach.
Definitely. And not spending all the money if we don't need to.
Can I just almost offer a counterpoint to that, actually, because it concerns me sometimes when I'm all for being tactically agile and nimble. However, I think strategically, when you're putting together your go-to-market plan, certainly in the space that I occupy, where you are doing, you know, deals with a deal cycle sometimes that run sort of 9 to 18 months. It's not something you can chop and change from month to month to month. And I do wonder that actually one of the things that we would look at is we would look at macroeconomic trends. Some of the surveys that I sometimes see the guys at the likes of PwC doing, I find incredibly useful. Same with EY and those kind of guys. I think there is a space for the agile, nimble market research. But equally, I do also want to get the more strategic view of the world that I then can sort of build my business plans around, that, you know, I don't necessarily want to chop and change every 5 minutes, because that's not good for business, especially when, like I say, I'm dealing with sales cycles where, you know, 9 to 18 months is not uncommon. And, you know, you're asking people to part with millions of pounds, euros, dollars, shekels, whatever. It's a slightly different environment. I think if the price point is lower and, you know, you're turning over product or service very, very quickly, yes, I think then you can be much more agile and nimble, and that's appropriate. But I guess that I find that a lot of the decision making for these kind of purchases can get quite emotional when you're, you know, again, when it's at the very large scales. You know, it's something that generally involves a number of different stakeholders that have spent a lot of time going through a procurement process for it. So it's just a slight little juxtaposition to your point.
Angela should have a right of reply to that.
I think we're talking about two slightly different things. I think that sort of strategic piece of research, I don't think anyone's kind of arguing with. I think the sort of things that Dave was referring to are projects which just seem to take forever to get done, to get to the same thing. So, you know, I have certainly in the past, I've heard from lots of clients that say, we spent months, even years, putting a segmentation together, and then nobody uses it. You know, it doesn't make any difference, you know, whereas you can do something quite quickly that has the same impact. So I don't think we're ignoring long-term trends, and I don't think we're ignoring those things. I think what we're trying to get away from is an ad hoc project that takes months and months. And believe me, there were a lot of those around, you know, that just seemed to take forever to do. So I don't think we're disagreeing with each other.
Cool.
Thank you.
Let's fire a question to Louis then. So Louis, you talked very much about, in fact, you put the question to the audience about how they felt they were doing in terms of the gap between the marketing team and the sales team. Bearing in mind that you've got on this call an audience of marketers, what are your top tips for how they can bridge that gap still further?
So the first thing is about interaction, right? And again, just going back to the almost like the market research theme, the most powerful research I think any marketer can do is to actually go on sales calls, meet your customers, you know. And I think that what I've certainly experienced in my career is when, you know, I've brought sales and marketing teams together, the first thing is get them all to go out on those sales calls together. And it creates an appreciation, I think, of both ends. And equally, there's no reason why the marketers can't turn around and say, actually, when I'm incepting a campaign, I want some sales input. I'm not going to do it in a vacuum. I want your thoughts in here, and I want you to come in on this. We don't have a right as marketers to have all the ideas. let's hear from you guys, because at the end of the day, I think one of the easiest cop-outs in any business is for, you know, sales, oh, well, it's all marketing. You know, this didn't work and that didn't work and the other didn't work. And then marketing, oh, well, the sales, work together, walk in each other's shoes. And I think that's the top tip. You know, there are oftentimes no right or wrong answers to a lot of the stuff that we all do. And I personally don't believe, and I think I've said this to you before, Dave, I don't believe that anybody turns up to work in the morning wanting to do a bad job. Everybody wants to do the best they possibly can. And I think it's very easy for all of us to get very blinkered about this is my little world and this is what I focus on, without necessarily appreciating what our colleagues do in other bits. So I think, you know, walking a mile in somebody else's shoes is a great start of a 10.
Thank you. Chris, we've had on this webinar in the past Professor Malcolm McDonald, who talks very passionately about the importance of planning. And his view is actually agility is a bit of a fad, that actually what we really need to do as an organization, regardless of whether there's a COVID crisis out there or whether actually there's a competitor coming and attacking our business, is that we really need to take a strategic, planned approach to what we do, and that marketing is actually part of the long term. It's not something that you can apply short term software sector approaches to. What would your right of reply be to that? I was worried I defended you for a minute.
No, I didn't press the mute button, I pressed the pause button. I think there are kind of two levels of question for that in relation to what we do. I think if you're talking more from how the agencies are working with brands from a B2C point of view, then I absolutely agree with that. I think what we do more day to day in kind of our business is that we work with agencies, and we spend a lot of time working with agencies to help them market to brands. And I think so obviously more from a kind of, you know, a B2B angle, so how we're working with marketing services agencies. And I think what I constantly say to marketing services agencies is, in such a cluttered market, you can't just keep following the latest trend. What you need to do is have something that you can own. So you need to feel that you've got, you know, content that actually speaks to your customers. And I think it's a really interesting point Louis talked there out there in terms of the sales and marketing piece. You see that a lot in agencies. They're very separate. The marketing people will produce lots of great content that tends to come from the agency directly based on what their views are on the market. But quite often they don't spend enough time trying to understand what brands are looking for and the challenges they're facing at this moment in time. It tends to be sometimes a bit too kind of inward facing and too much about them, and they don't really go out there and try and understand what the marketeer is looking for and the challenges they face. So I think when I'm talking about this agility piece, I'm talking really more about what's happened in the last 3 months, how agencies have had to change for the benefit of their clients. I think what's absolutely crucial for agencies now more than ever is that they have, coming out of this, a real clear direction about where they want to go as a business, and they have the fundamentals in place to be able to change to achieve that. I think you can't criticize an experiential agency for suddenly pivoting into digital, because if they didn't, they wouldn't have had a business in the last 4 months. So that's where I'm talking about agility. What does that mean for said experiential agency moving forward? Well, clearly with pandemics and what's happened is things are going to have to change for those experiential agencies, and they need to learn from what they can do in other areas. But it doesn't mean that they're never going to do events again, because there will be a time where we can have events. They need to understand how quickly they can move into virtual events, for example. And I saw that quite with a few of our clients in the event space and experiential space early on. Is one of them in particular had a brilliant virtual product, and they went for it really quickly. Whereas another one felt it was too expensive to get into that virtual world, so they really pulled back. Now, what I liked about that one that had something, they were going for it, is they were dealing with the here and the now. but they're also, as a business, if you talk about what they're trying to build as a business, they're still going to try and get back into creating big events, but they're going to realize that those big events are just going to be different, right? They're not going to be 1,000 people or 2,000 people to fly into Barcelona. There might be 500 people there, but then a lot of it will be virtual as well, and the content and how it's streamed. So I think more important now, as we start to come out of this, if we are completely, I mean, even if we're not completely coming out of it, we're going to realize that we do need a plan of what our business is going to be. And I'm starting to see that again with our agencies. But I think the great thing about this period is they've had to learn from this period. And it is something that, you know, not many businesses have had to deal for. You know, we talked about, and you talked about recessions, but this has been quite different how quickly it happened and what was chucked in front of them. So, yeah, I completely agree. You've got to have a longer term plan. I'm not saying that you need to just change with the wind. I also think you need to change. You need to have the ability to change depending on what channel you use. And I think that goes back to what Louis talked about earlier as well, is that from a marketing point of view, you need to create engaging content that you can own. But sometimes from a sales and lead generation point of view, you do sometimes need to follow the market a little bit, because that's where the trend is, and that starts a conversation. That conversation starts there, but it goes off in another direction. So, hopefully that answers the question. But I suppose the point is that you shouldn't just be moving and following where you're going. You've got to have both. And you've got to have, you know, I think agencies in particular now are going to be in a really hard space, a lot of them, because they've done so much in the last 3 or 4 months that's slightly out of their comfort zone, because they've had to adapt for their clients based on their clients' needs. And so what they're now going to have to do, but they've got to get back to what they're good at, but they've also got to get back to the point that Louis made about where they can make money as well, because it has been a bit of survival for the last 4 months for a lot of organizations. So it's kind of course we can do that. We're brilliant at that. It's like, right, how do we do that? But actually what they need to do is they've got to still work about what are they good at. It goes back to the point I made about focus. You know, if you're from the world of customer engagement or from the world of research or experiential and your market is slightly changed, you still got to be rooted back to that and kind of drive that forward. So yeah, I think you've got to be going somewhere and have that direction, because as much as anything, you won't get new clients or you won't get people to work for you if you don't have that direction. But you need to show the ability to change when things hit.
Brilliant. Thank you. We're out of time, so we'll need to close things there. You can listen again to this webinar from tomorrow. And the next show and tell webinar is in a fortnight, when we'll be looking at how change affects business marketing with IBM's customer experience campaign leader, Samantha Bentley, with Sharper B2B Marketing's Russ Powell, with product consultant Asomi Ithia, and with O2 Telefonica UK's head of business marketing, Zoe Hominick. Next Wednesday, it's our big networking webinar, the big community hall, which, as well as networking, offers meditation, notices, and a debate on emotion in branding with Deloitte's CMO, Annabelle Rake, with Rooster Punk's Paul Cash, and with strategy consultant Yuri Baruchin. You need to sign up on our website if you want to take part in that one. Available to download now is our weekly podcast. This week it's all about intent marketing. And if you sign up to be a member of the Business Marketing Club, you can get access to all of our events, webinars, mentoring services, white papers and blogs free of charge. That includes that white paper that I was talking about to Chris from Emeritus Professor of Cranfield University School of Management, Malcolm McDonald, about financially quantified value propositions. Details of all of that at businessmarketingclub.org.uk, or you can contact me at davestevensnow@gmail.com. So thank you to our brilliant speakers, to Chris Kemp, to Angela Richmond, and to Louis Fernandez. Thank you. And thanks to our brilliant backroom team of Louise Neal, Claire Sheriff, Lise Bailey-Probert, Alex Horn, and Jay Neal. And most of all, thanks to you for participating in all of this. And I hope you have a great day. Thanks, everyone. Bye for now.
Bye-bye. Thank you.
Thank you.